Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me and hope you're all doing well out there in Bulls Nation. It's been a fun week in Bulls basketball, a couple wins and a narrow loss to the Golden State Warriors in a really, really competitive game. So if you're a fan of, I guess, the entertaining brand of basketball that the Bulls have been playing of late, you would have enjoyed this week with a win over the Miami Heat and again against the Atlanta Hawks. And as I mentioned, that close loss to the best team in the league, the Golden State Warriors. The Bulls were absolutely incredible in that game. And I guess Mirotić, again, continues to play extremely well. Was brilliant in that Golden State Warriors game. And didn't get a ton of minutes in this Hawks game, most recent game. But at the same time, he continues to show how good of a player and how important of a player he has been to the Bulls this season. So a fun week in Bulls basketball. But what I wanted to talk about more so than the games themselves this week is the impact of these wins and the continuing wins on, I guess, the tanking effort that the Bulls were hoping to be embarking on. And if you're looking at this season from a tanking perspective and the long-term ramifications of the Bulls winning games that we thought they would have no chance of winning earlier in this season, I'm not sure if you could be looking at this season as a success if we're purely focusing on that aspect. Obviously, if we're talking about things like player development and, I guess, the team beating expectations, then the Bulls have definitely been a revelation. They've been incredible from that front, but if we're looking at it purely on the efforts of tanking, then thus far this season, it's probably going pretty poorly considering where we were at the start of the seasons where the Bulls only had 3 games and, you know, 20 odd losses or so. So the tank is looking like it's in jeopardy. And I sort of wonder, to myself at least, is the tank officially dead? And it's the question, I guess, that's among Bulls Nation at the moment. And it's going to be, I guess, the dominating theme for the remainder of the season, depending on what happens at the trade deadline. So I've seen this sort of, or this narrative start to form online. To be fair, it's been on there for quite a while now, but it's picking up more steam as the Bulls continue to win and as we get closer to the trade deadline. We haven't heard a lot about the Mirotić trade rumors since last week. There has been nothing really this week. It still appears like Mirotić wants to be traded. I'm sure the Bulls are still looking for a trade partner out there to move him for hopefully a decent first round pick. But at the moment, there hasn't really been any movement at all on that front. So what's happening, I guess, is the Bulls are keeping this current rotation in there. They're playing super hard and against good teams, which the Miami Heat are at the moment. They're top 4 in the East. The Golden State Warriors, we obviously know how good they are. They put forward 2 really good performances against quality teams. They got the 1 win and a very close loss. And obviously we saw against the Atlanta Hawks that the Bulls, as currently constructed, are way better than a team like the Atlanta Hawks, who are firmly bottom 3 in the standings and are looking pretty good in terms of their own tank race or their own tank seating, I should say. So the Bulls, I guess, are going to need to really start asking themselves what their objective for the remainder of this season is going to be. Is it going to be trying to keep winning, trying to develop through this winning and pushing towards the playoffs? Or are they going to try and shore this tank up? And they need to be asking themselves these questions and they need that answer pretty quickly because the next probably 8 to 10 games may determine where this season goes from here on out. And the reason why I say that is obviously the trade deadline is fast approaching. We're only about 2 weeks away from that. The trade deadline itself is February 8th. And we're roughly 2 weeks away from that point. So the Bulls need to start thinking about what they're going to be doing, not just with Mirotić, but also with guys like Lopez, Justin Holiday, and even Jerry and Grant, who's been spoken about as being on the block as well. So they need to be thinking about that, and they need to be thinking about it quickly because their next 7 to 8 games aren't necessarily their most hardest games coming up. We obviously saw the Hawks game today, and the Bulls were definitely outclassing those Hawks. And even without Mirotić performing at a high level, they're able to comfortably beat the Atlanta Hawks on the road. And if we look ahead at the schedule, they've got 2 road games this week against the New Orleans Pelicans and then the Philadelphia 76ers. And then they're back at home against the Lakers and Bucks to close out the week. So if you think about those 4 teams and the fact that the Bulls are playing pretty much at above 500 level since December 1, You would probably think the Bulls have a reasonable chance at winning at least two of those games, probably that game against the Lakers. And given that they've been extremely competitive against the Bucks this season, I think you would even peg them against Milwaukee. And maybe they could even beat Philly if Joel Embiid doesn't play. They could still beat them even if he does. So I think it's fair to say that the Bulls finish this week coming up with a 2-2 record. And if they do so, their record on the season would be 20-30. Now, when you start thinking about that record on where we thought the Bulls may be at the start of this season, I think a lot of us would have thought they'd be at around, 18-25 wins on the season. And given how it started, it was sort of trending that way when they were 3-23. It looked like they were going to be, one of the worst teams in the league by far. They were on track there to get that number one pick. But since then, they've been much, much better, and they're playing above 500 ball. And the teams that they've got coming up in the next four games, they're pretty much teams hovering around 500, or in the Lakers' case, well below 500. So there's four winnable games that are coming up here. And if the Bulls do really well this week, that's going to really jeopardize the tank. So I wanted to talk about this in the first half of this show. I guess the likelihood of the tank being dead. And when this discussion comes up, I think what we need to really address straight away is, what do we mean by tanking, and what does the result of tanking need to be? If we're talking top three picks, then the Bulls tank is probably dead. I think it's safe to say, as we saw against the Atlanta Hawks, that the Bulls, even without Nikola Mirotic, probably won't be bad enough to, I guess, compete with the Hawks, the Sacramento Kings, and the Orlando Magic in terms of the tanking race. Those three teams look superior if we're talking about tanking. The Bulls do look like a better team. The Bulls' younger core players are much better than what the Kings, the Hawks, and what the Orlando Magic currently have. And the way those teams are playing, the Bulls are gelling, and their chemistry at the moment is off the chart. So you can't really imagine the Bulls being as bad as those sorts of teams. So if we're talking about the tank, and maybe the tank resulting in a top three pick, assuming there's no funny business going down in the lottery in terms of the lottery balls bouncing our way, then getting a top three pick is very unlikely. But to me, at least, I think if we're talking about tanking in general and a tank maybe resulting in a top four or five pick, then I still think that's on the agenda. And the reason I say that is, at the moment, the Bulls are only 2.5 games back on the Dallas Mavericks for the fourth worst record in the league. So the Mavs are at a 15-30 record, and the Bulls are at 18-28. Now, obviously, that can change with results, and if the Bulls come away from this week coming up with the schedule that I mentioned before and against those four teams and do quite well, then obviously that's going to change things. But even with all these wins, there's still not a large gap between the Bulls and the Mavs, who currently have the fourth worst record in the league. And there's even less of a gap between the Bulls and teams like the Los Angeles Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets, who are two teams that don't really have any incentive at all to tank. So LA Lakers at the moment, they have the sixth worst record in the league, and the Nets have the seventh worst record in the league. And both those teams do not own their first round pick this season. They're going to other teams, so they don't necessarily have any incentive to be improving on their tank to improve their odds of that draft pick. So when you look at those teams that are bunched up between sort of 4-8, so I mentioned the Mavericks, I've mentioned the Lakers and the Nets, but you've also got the Suns and the Memphis Grizzlies in there as well. If you look at the Bulls, and particularly a Bulls without Nikola Mirotic in the rotation, I think it's definitely possible that the Bulls can still sneak into that 4-5 range. So when we talk about the tank being dead, we almost need to separate the discussion by ranking the draft picks into tiers and sort of putting the odds as to where the Bulls will be and the likelihood of receiving a pick in that range, depending on if they trade Mirotic. So if we assume that they're trading Mirotic, in my opinion, I think they can re-enter that tanking race for a pick in that 4-7 range, which would definitely be valuable and would be a nice piece for the first year of the rebuild if they can get their hands on, say, the fifth pick and draft maybe a Mohamed Bamba or a Jaren Jackson Jr. or maybe even Michael Porter Jr. If someone like that is sitting there at five, if the Bulls happen to be taking that pick, then that's probably a pretty good result given the way the rebuild has gone and the way that they've been winning and developing these players in wins. If they can come away from this season by dealing Mirotić, getting some sort of asset for Mirotić that makes sense, maybe a late first round pick, whilst improving their own draft pick, then that would be a pretty successful year one of the rebuild, even if they didn't necessarily get a top three pick themselves. So that's what I'm hoping they're going to be doing over the next coming weeks, particularly before the trade deadline, because it's really important in these next eight or so games that they start to shore up that tank. And if we look beyond this week, they've got games on the road against the Portland Trail Blazers, the Los Angeles Clippers, and the Sacramento Kings before the trade deadline. So they're three teams, again, that, well, two of them at least, are 500 teams, or are roughly around a 500 record. And given that the Bulls are pretty much 15 and 11 since December 1, you would think that they have a good chance of beating a team like Portland Trail Blazers or the Los Angeles Clippers, even though it's on the road. So if they were able to do that and were to beat a Kings team as well, then of course that's going to limit their opportunity to improving their tanking position for that 4-7 range. But if they're able to deal Mirotić sort of in the next week or so, then there's still a really good shot at getting a pick in that 4-7 range. So that's what I want to be seeing them doing, and that's what I want them to be shoring up in the next week or so. But beyond that, if you think about this Bulls team and maybe keeping Mirotić or whether Mirotić fits on this team, I also wanted to, I guess, discuss the point of, does it really make sense to keep Mirotić around, even if, I guess, he is performing at this level for the remainder of this season, maybe even into the next part of his deal, which will, if the Bulls pick up his option, will obviously be only next season. So I wanted to discuss the idea of whether we keep Mirotić, not just from a tanking point of view, but does it make sense to keep him just looking at the roster moving forward over the next, I guess, 1-3 seasons? And something I wanted to address, I guess, is, and in combination with this Atlanta Hawks game, is, does it really make sense next to Lauri Markkanen long term? And we saw today when Robin Lopez is playing well, Fred Hoiberg is going to have a tough time, I guess, playing Nikola Mirotić minutes he does deserve. So he only saw the 20 minutes today against the Hawks. Lauri played the 30 minutes and Robin Lopez had 25. So in that instance, and with Bobby Portis on the bench as well, who also needs roughly around 20 minutes a game, the Bulls do have a front court logjam, and they need to deal someone from that front court going forward. And obviously, Mirotić makes the most sense because he has, I guess, the most value in a trade, and he's definitely older when you compare him to Lauri Markkanen and Bobby Portis. So when you start to think about it that way, and in games where Lauri Markkanen is playing well as Robin Lopez, does it make sense to keep Mirotić from, I guess, a rotation perspective? And obviously that raises the question of, well, if Robin Lopez wasn't there, you could afford to play Mirotić more with Markkanen. But I'm not sure if that's necessarily going to be something the Bulls can just do at forward and center, just, you know, going forward. I don't think you can just remove Robin Lopez and not replace him with another center at all. I think you would still need to bring in a center. I don't think you can ask Mirotić or Markkanen to be a full-time center at this point. So maybe you could still use those two guys together in the rotation, but I think you would still need to go out there and get a center, whether it's in the draft or in free agency, someone like Clint Capela or maybe DeAndre Jordan or whoever that name may be. I think you would still need to invest in a center because whilst those guys can play some spot minutes there and together the offense is so much, it provides so much spacing with those two there, I don't think it's something that's viable for a full 82-game season. So I wanted to talk about that because Mirotić as well is only on, I guess, at best, a 1.5-year deal. The Bulls have a team option for next season. Assuming they pick that up, they'll have him around for one more season and obviously the remaining half of this season. So they're not necessarily invested in Mirotić long term. And I guess that sort of makes sense when you think about what they have in Lauri Markkanen. And if we're to assume Lauri Markkanen continues to develop at this rate, sooner rather than later, you're going to need to start playing a pretty consistent 33 or 34 minutes. So he's currently around that 29-30 range. But as he continues to grow, gets a little bit stronger, gets better, shows more in the isolation game, you're going to have to play more minutes. And if you're doing so, it's going to have to come at the expense of someone. And I just wonder, given Mirotic's trade value, given that he's playing his best basketball right now and that his trade value is probably never going to be any higher, I do wonder if there's a bit of an opportunity cost in having two very similar players playing the same position. They're both best at power forward, whether it's somewhat redundant by having maybe two of your best players playing the same position. In that regard, it's very similar to the Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah discussion that we had maybe 2 years ago when the Bulls brought in Pau Gasol and made Noah sort of shift down to power forward. That ultimately affected Joakim Noah's game, and by the Bulls bringing on two centers and making them play in the front court together, one of them is going to suffer, and in that instance, it was Joakim Noah. And I do wonder if that's going to be the case here if the Bulls think about maybe keeping Mirotić and trying to, I guess, put forward this combination of Mirotić and Markkanen going forward and using that at forward and center more as a long-term solution. And I do wonder in that case if one of those players would suffer if they have to play extended minutes at center over an 82-game season rather than, you know, occasional minutes here and there. So bringing it back to the Atlanta Hawks game where Mirotić only played the 20 minutes, and I'm not necessarily being critical of Fred Hoiberg. I think with the way Lopez was dominating inside and Lauri Markkanen continuously dunking all over the Atlanta Hawks front court, I think he made the right decision in how he distributed his minutes. I guess I'm just questioning whether it makes sense to have someone of Mirotić's caliber, I guess, only playing 20 minutes a game. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen every game. There will be nights where he plays 30 minutes a game, but in reality, Nikola Mirotić is a player that deserves to be starting. He's good enough to be a starting power forward in this league. And for a lot of teams in this league, he would be a starting power forward. And had he not got in that scuffle with Bobby Portis and had his face broken at the start of the season, he would have been the Bulls' starting power forward. So he's someone that deserves minutes. And if he continues to play this well, he's going to be someone that deserves a pretty pricey contract. And if the Bulls keep him around, in the next 1.5 seasons, they're going to have to pay him a contract that's much more than in the current $12.5 million that he's currently earning. They gave him that contract after a pretty down year, I guess, in terms of the way it sort of finished and the way it played out there. So given that his plays obviously exceeded what he produced last season and he's still got a $12.5 million deal, what does his next deal look like? And you have to start thinking about that along with the fact that you're going to be, I guess, potentially throwing a max contract at Zach LaVine. Hopefully not. Hopefully it's a number closer to $20 million. But if you're upping Zach LaVine to that amount of money and you're going to have to pay Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen a contract in the future years, you're going to need to start to, I guess, think about where your total cap position is going to be. And if you come into this with Nikola Mirotić being a free agent in 1.5 years' time and you have to pay him somewhere around the $20 million range, and you're playing him as a backup, what is that going to do for your ultimate cap position? So you've got to think about trading Mirotić now, not only for your own draft pick and shoring that up, but if you start thinking about the rotation and how Mirotić fits with Markkanen long term, I have questions about that combination as a 4-5 combination as a starting unit. But if your answer to that is, well, okay, let's keep Mirotić on the bench, I still have issues with that because he's someone that deserves to be playing heavy minutes, deserves to be playing 30 minutes a game. And to be fair to him, his play has warranted that. And he's easily the best bench player in the NBA right now. And Mirotić deserves to be a starter somewhere. And if it's not going to be Chicago, then they should move him because there is a bit of a redundancy with having him playing the best, or his best position being the same one that Lauri Markkanen plays. So to me, it makes sense from a tanking perspective to move on from Mirotić now to maximize his value and get something back for him whilst improving your own draft pick, but at the same time thinking about sort of the next 1.5 to 2 seasons time and where the Bulls cap will be. It probably doesn't make sense to be putting yourself in a position where you need to re-sign someone that's currently locked in as your backup power forward to a number in excess of $15 million. So I wanted to put that on the table because most of the talk you do hear with Mirotić is in relation to trading him this season and improving the tanking position, I guess. But at the same time, I think it's also relevant to start talking about Mirotić and how he fits with this team long term, not just as his fit in terms of with players therefore around him, but also from a cap perspective and what he will, I guess, garner in those free agency periods and how much he's going to cost. So I wanted to get that out there and I wanted to talk about that because obviously it's going to be a relevant topic for the next 2 weeks or so before the trade deadline passes. So not only do the Bulls need to think about Mirotić from a tanking point of view, but they also need to think about what they're going to do with him if they do keep him this season and moving forward. So wanted to get that out there. But moving along, I've actually got a guest on this podcast as well, so it won't just be me ranting about tanking for a full hour or so. I've actually got my old friend, and emphasis on old, my friend Fred Pfeiffer joining me, obviously host of the Bulls, Chicago Bulls Eye podcast, and now the host of the Big Red Bus, another Chicago Bulls podcast. So I wanted to get Fred on the line to give us an update on the Big Red Bus and how the team is performing now that Zach LaVine is back. I'm tipping Fred is pretty excited about Zach LaVine returning from that ACL injury. So, Fred, thanks for joining me.
It's always a pleasure. It's always an honor to be on with you, Mark. And I feel like we're bringing worlds together. You know, we're probably at the opposite spectrum on the beloved Bull. And every time we get together, I think we get a little bit closer to harmony to that Great Danes Grant Park in 2020 when we're finally together as a big group celebrating the Bulls 7 title. What say you?
Well, it's a romantic picture you're posing there, I guess. I'd like to say it might happen, but we shall see. But I wanted to get you on because for two reasons. One, you help balance out this podcast in a sense. You mentioned the dichotomy between my position and yours. but I also wanted to get you on because not only are you the driver of the Big Red Bus, as you've coined it, but you've also started up a podcast, a new Bulls podcast called The Big Red Bus. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, with the great Doug Tonis, who's a very close friend of mine who kind of left the scene for a while. And I think his voice is sorely missed. I think you'd agree with that. I think we all respect Doug tremendously. And he's I call him the godfather of Bulls podcast. I mean, he was the only one that was really around when Mark and I started in 2007. Mark Lewenthal and I started the Chicago Bullseye. There was one other one by a gentleman by the name of Brian Cush. I don't know if you remember Cush. He's also kind of a legendary figure, and he ran Running with the Bulls. Did you ever listen to that show?
I think that was before my time, to be honest with you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, those two shows were tremendously entertaining, very good. And but Doug, especially with just his knowledge of the cap, he's just an extremely intelligent fellow. So it's kind of an honor to start this up with him. It was really, you know, Doug's idea that maybe we try to get together every week and talk Bulls. And I thought the first iteration of it was a lot of fun, bringing that Big Red Bus out on the road. It was, you know, we hit a couple potholes and but we were able to get the tires back on.
Good to
hear. It was a great run. Yeah, thanks for letting me promote it.
No, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on. And where can people get a hold of that?
So you can go to Chicago Bullseye or go on iTunes. It's basically on the Chicago Bullseye feed. So if you go to iTunes and do a search for Chicago Bullseye, I'm not sure if Doug's been able to set it up yet where if you do a Big Red Bus search, you'll find it. But you'll find our show at the ChicagoBullseye.com. Also, you're up there too, which is an honor to have you, which, you know, Bulls HQ is one of my favorites. I listen to it every week. Sometimes get nauseous. Sometimes I enjoy it. And, I always like to hear a different point of view, right? And you know, you definitely back it up. So you're someone I respect. There's a lot of people that share your view who just throw their hands in the air out of frustration and just, you know, just in a general anger with no really numbers to back it up.
Yeah.
If there's a case against Garpax in the org, you're going to make it the best you can.
Well, I try to, Fred, but I wanted people to hear about Big Red Bus because it was a good first episode, but I wanted to have you on also to, I guess, update me on this Big Red Bus because it's been maybe a month since I had you on last, and I want to get you on more frequently, like I said, because you help balance the podcast to a degree, and I wanted a bit of an update on the Big Red Bus or the Big Red Leviathan, whatever you want to call it, now that Zach LaVine is back. And last time we spoke, he wasn't back. And I'm tipping, based on the few games that we have seen from him, you're pretty excited from what you've seen.
I don't see how you can't be excited. Like, I noticed when I pull the Big Red Bus out, it's a lot more crowded than it used to be. There's a lot more people on the bus.
I mean, how much are you charging for admission to the Big Red Bus, Fred? Just by
I don't know. Probably not enough, whatever it is. I mean, I definitely need to reevaluate that, because, you know, all the frustration and all the anger that I heard over the summer has really started to dissipate. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing, because all that anger and frustration was really misplaced. And as I've said 100 times, all the anger in the fan base is due to two things. Derrick Rose signing a long-term contract and him not approaching anywhere near where he was when he signed that contract, and Noah in the middle of his long-term contract. Both of those players just became, you know, transformed from an NBA MVP and a defensive MVP into two players that are almost out of the league now. And I think, you know, regardless, no NBA team has ever had to deal with that. It's something that I don't think any other team going forward may have to deal with at such a short notice. The Bulls did have the core, if you look at it, Butler, Noah, and Rose, that would have won multiple titles, but it didn't happen. So now here we are. We tried to rebuild, and this rebuild in reality has been going on ever since we traded Rose, right? We got Lopez in return for that. We let Noah walk. And people, I think, kind of look at this as like, you know, we were going for a title last year. I don't view it that way. I viewed it the minute we traded Rose, that's when this kind of transformation came. And, you know, the Bulls chose to try to remain competitive during that period, as they always have. And I'm grateful for that. I don't believe in the Sam Hinkie, Saint Hinkie, you know, 6-5, 6-7 year plan of sucking and just hoping you hit a home run, a few high picks. I think that's just a fool's gold. So, and then I think all we look, if anybody thinks logically and sees this team, LaVine, Dunn, Markkanen, how can you be upset? How can you be angry? How can you not see the promise, the future in these guys? I mean, since Nico came back, 14-7 on pace for 54 to 55 wins. And these guys are 20, 22, and 23 years old. Markkanen 20, LaVine 22, Dunn 23. Is there any team in the history of the NBA with players that young that did not get considerably better over the next 3 to 5 years? I can't think of one. So I think the future is bright. You know, and there's that big question out there. Is this enough to win a title, or is it not? I know I'm in the minority there that believes that this is enough, and with some solid pieces adding around it, around this core, that we could win a title. I don't think most people believe that. I think most people still feel that we need to add an impact player in this upcoming draft. What say you?
Well, I mean, that's why I got you on, Fred, to have that counterpoint, because I'm still definitely in Team Tank. And my next question to you was going to be, I guess, where is that big red bus making a stop at next? Is it going towards the draft, towards the top of the draft, or is it headed towards the playoffs? Where are you driving this thing?
Well, I think the bus could be driven right over the cliff and right into the, you know, massive explosion with the trade of Nico, the trade of Nwaba, Lopez, and Holiday. Those four players, I've heard a couple of people say, you know, I still think we can be good enough even if we remove those four. I don't see how that's possible. I think we're going to lose a lot of games if we remove those four guys, especially Lopez. To me, is such an underrated key piece of winning.
Yeah.
Does so many things on a defensive end that are underappreciated and not really noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if we want to tank, that can happen. There's no doubt. I think the world owes you an apology and a big pat on the back for your Nico love throughout the years, because by any measure, he's been a resounding success since coming back. I think a lot of us in the back of our minds question whether or not he can continue to keep it up. But with every game of 20 plus and just incredible performance, maybe you're right, Mark. Maybe you're right. Maybe Nico Mirotić has figured it out at the age of 26, and maybe this guy is one of the better, you know, power forwards in the NBA. I was blown away with how good he played against Golden State. I don't think enough was talked about. I think lost in, you know, Dunn losing his teeth and the general overall great effort by the beloved. Nico was fantastic in that game. And he doesn't get enough love for how well he's shooting the threes. 45%. I still can't believe it. Will that continue? I doubt it. But, you know, I've been wrong before, you know, and maybe two or three, four times before. And maybe I'll be wrong again.
So on the record then, while I've got you, are you prepared to admit that you were wrong about Nikola Mirotić? Is that what you're sort of hinting at, but not necessarily saying?
I don't see how you can make that statement based on what I said. I still think in the future, I don't see him performing at this high of a level going forward. I will be prepared to say I was wrong if I see this this level of performance throughout an entire year. No doubt about it. Okay. I mean, we've seen flashes from Nico. You know, I've said that too. I said the kid is extremely talented, no doubt there. But what's truly impressed me is at the sustained level of hitting three. I mean, there's something about the three-point shot. It's just as an aside, I coach a girls' basketball team.
Yeah.
And in our opening game, we played a team that walked in the gym, and the smallest girl on the team was about 6'1". I'm 6 feet tall. I could not believe the size of this team. They had seven girls on the team.
Yeah.
And normally, for the past 30 years of when you look at that team and watching basketball, you'd expect a team like that to throw the ball down low and just dominate underneath. This team hit six threes. It was amazing how far they hit, how long they could shoot from. And I think that just kind of is a symbol of how the game's transformed and how important that shot is. And the power of the three is really, it's something I don't think we talk about enough. We were down, I think, 8-3. They had two back-to-back possessions with made threes. And you go from 8-3 to 14-3 in like a matter of 40 seconds. The power of that shot, the extra point that you get, and the swings that can occur through that shot, it's just so overwhelming. And that's something that I think any team in the NBA is going to need to be able to hit in order to win. It's just how the game is transformed. So if Nico keeps on shooting the three at a 45% rate, he's going to be one of the most valuable players in this NBA, most desired players, I'd say, for the next 10 years. That's the big question, though. Can he do it?
True. And two things that I wanted to note from what you just said there. One, you did mention if he sustains this for the end of the year that you will be prepared to say that I was right and you were wrong. So I'm going to hold you to that.
I will. Well, if he's over 41%,
yeah,
man, I'm really digging my own grave here, because it's going to be hard for him to get below that probably.
Without me. No, keep digging, please.
If he's below 42%, let's go 42. He's below 42%, I will give you a public apology 41. And I will acknowledge your greatness and intelligence.
Yep. Okay, cool. So 41% it is. And the other thing I wanted to pick you up on was, you mentioned you're coaching your daughter's, was it your daughter's basketball team there? And how
7th grade, we just came back from our second straight victory. That's why I was late. I apologize about it. No, what a bloodbath it was.
No, yeah. Well, congratulations on the win, but I wanted to question you about your 3-point defense if you're allowing back-to-back possessions of this other team to score two threes from deep. What are you doing, Fred? What is your coverage for those 3-point shots?
I have a strategy. When I saw how big these girls were, is I call what's called a 2-1-2 shell, which I want the players to just guard the paint. Don't let anybody in the paint. And what I've seen from 7th and 8th grade girls is, in general, 9 out of 10 teams that you play will be unable to shoot the three, or even better yet, they'll be seduced by the power of the three and just start launching up threes. Most girls can't hit threes at this age. And so that's what I'm always trying to encourage, is the opposition to fire it up. Come on. You get an extra point for it, right? And I've never seen a team actually hurt us like this team did. So thus the 38-5 loss. And we were a little undermanned. That's why I also stressed, pack it in. I don't need you expending energy guarding, 40 feet out. Yeah. But games 2 and 3, we turned things around. That's the other big thing about marketing too. Just as an aside that I wanted to bring up, you got to guard that guy out 40 feet, and Nico really right now. I mean, that's
40 feet, even 40 feet.
You have to put so much pressure on a defense and extending them and expending energy. It's beautiful to see, it sometimes brings tears to my eyes. I don't know if you feel this way, how good this team could potentially be. I guess, how good do you think this team could potentially be if we kept it together? I know you're a big Nico proponent. Let's just close our eyes and pretend that fight with Portis never happened and everything was, kumbaya.
Yeah.
Do you think this team next year could have won 50 to 60 games?
No chance. Wow. Absolutely no chance, Fred. So I think if Mirotić doesn't get punched in the face by Mirotić, then by Portis, then Markkanen's probably not starting. Is Markkanen, even the second or the backup power forward? Probably not. He's probably sharing minutes with Portis. Like maybe Portis is shifted to center, and Markkanen in that scenario is playing backup power forward, but he's definitely not starting the season averaging anywhere near 30 minutes a game and doing what he's doing, he wouldn't be anywhere near 100 threes on the season because he wouldn't be playing as many minutes as he has Great been. Call. So I don't think that would be the case. So no, I don't think so, Fred. But and look, it may have been good. It may have been a good thing from a trade perspective for Mirotić. He would have had more time to hopefully play at this level and hopefully sell some teams on, or convincing teams that this what he's doing is real. I guess maybe that's why there isn't a ton of interest in him, for him at the moment, because maybe teams still aren't convinced that what they're seeing is real. But yeah, I think 50 or 60 games might be a bit of a stretch for me to sign up for there, Fred. Just personally, I don't know about you.
I meant, in fairness to myself and my argument, I meant next season. So let's say we ran with this, LaVine in a full year, healthy, and bringing Nico back, still playing at a high level.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's out of the question that team could win 50 games in this weekend East.
Well, I think
in NBA in general,
it's certainly out of the question that they could win 60 games, which you did throw out there. 50 games. I know. I understand that they're on a 52 to 54 win pace, depending on when you cut the data as to December 1, December 8, or whatever date range you take. But at the same time, that's only over 25 games or so. So extrapolating that over the season, whilst it's a nice little talking point, I guess I don't think that's likely either. But I do think they would be a playoff team next season, assuming you could roll with this team and the continuity remained and there was no issues in the locker room or anything of that nature. So I think they could definitely push towards a playoff berth next season, assuming they keep this team largely intact, add a draft pick, maybe add one or two role players from free agency, and then I think the Bulls would be back into the playoffs, probably as a low seed, somewhere in the 6-8 range, winning maybe 45 games or something. Conservatively, that's what I would say. So I wouldn't say 50, but a lot would be dependent, obviously, on development. And I wanted to talk about Chris Dunn because, unfortunately, he's going to be missing quite a few games, at least, based on the reporting at this point, given that they've said he's out indefinitely, which doesn't sound great. And I guess that could be one or two games. It could be, maybe 2 weeks. Who knows? These are the things with concussions. There is no real timeline. I guess it's almost dependent on the individual and the injury they've sustained. But I'm disappointed to see Dunn go out. Obviously, he got injured, so that always, you never want to see that sort of thing. But I wanted to see, now that LaVine is back, that Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen combination. And we got a glimpse of that against the Warriors. We saw a bit of that against the Heat. So it's been a really good week of Bulls basketball. And for someone like you who's driving that big red bus, how are you feeling about Dunn missing games and someone like Jerry and Grant stepping in and maybe derailing that season or derailing that late season playoff push?
Well, I feel awful about the fact that Dunn's missing time because he has been so good. One thing about Dunn, there's two types of defenders in generally any level of basketball. There's disruptive defenders and fundamental defenders. And there's a fundamental defender is a guy like, let's say, a Lou Aldang. He's a great fundamental player. He puts himself in the right position all the time. But I never felt Lou Aldang was the kind of guy that was really going to cause havoc to your offense. Those kind of guys always really bothered, I think, caused more coaches to lose sleep. And those are guys like, I thought Ronnie Brewer was a guy like that. He was always very aggressive in jumping passing lanes, causing a lot of problems. Obviously, he never had a sustained level of excellence over a number of years. But Dunn, to me, he's second in the league in steals. He is so disruptive of, sometimes just the mere fact when you're trying to set up your offense. I love how aggressive he is and kind of extending out the offense, out what was planned. Those kind of guys are kind of rare. Most guys like to kind of conserve their energy and not really go all out like that. And you have to have a physical build for that type of, to be a really true disruptive defender like Scottie Pippen was. You got to have long arms. You got to be athletic. If you don't have those two things, you can't really be a disruptive defender. And Dunn, I think, has the ability to be a top three guard in the NBA as far as defensive abilities go. And he's already second in the league in steals and in one of the lower MPGs. So you see a guy playing that well. This is definitely a setback. And I think the delta between Chris Dunn and Grant is like a Grand Canyon. I think Grant as a starter, frankly, sucks. I think he's one of the worst starters in the NBA. At best, he's a backup point guard, and he's nowhere near as on the defensive end. He's not even in the same class on either end, in my opinion. So I don't know if you feel this way about Dunn. One of the things I've most been impressed with, I've heard he was a great defensive player. You know, so I wasn't that surprised. I was a little bit surprised he was this good. Like I said, I consider him to be a lead already. But he's a lot better facilitator and passer than I expected. I didn't expect it. I think he does that really well. I think he sets up guys really well. And you see him getting better and improving throughout the season. Am I nuts, or do you see this too?
No, he's definitely been a good passing point guard this season. So it's something I probably underrated about his game. I thought he could do a little bit of it. I wasn't convinced that he could be the primary initiator of an offense for a team. I thought maybe as a secondary sort of playmaker at a pick and roll, then he could be valuable, sort of, you know, I guess creating when, you know, the first action doesn't necessarily prove fruitful. You swing the ball and you get it to Dunn, and then maybe deeper in the clock he can create a play for you as that second guy. But he's proven thus far that he's more than capable of creating a decent offense. Well, I won't say decent offense because the Bulls haven't been a decent offense, but he can create offense for you. And to back that up, not necessarily a game against the Warriors because he only had the 4 assists, but prior to that, he pretty much had, I think, 8 games or 7 games of 8 or more assists. So he definitely can, I guess, you know, really facilitate this offense. And not that assists are the only way to, I guess, categorize if someone's a good passer or a playmaker, but generally you go to the assist column, you see how much they have, and if a guy's routinely racking up 8 or more, like Dunn has been of late, then that's positive for him moving forward. And I think that needs to be his role, particularly as LaVine starts to settle in as a more offensive piece, maybe the team's number one option.
Quick question for you that I've asked a couple of people. I'd like to get your opinion on it. As you see these three, let's assume we don't add anybody that's a real true difference maker in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So going forward with this team for the next, you know, 3 to 4 years,
yep,
it's going to be Dunn, Markin, and LaVine. When we get to crunch time, out of those three, do you kind of see someone taking the lead, or who do you think is best equipped to kind of handle that role as the go-to guy down the stretch in close games?
At the moment, you have to say LaVine, just purely because, I mean, he has the combination of scoring efficiency whilst being a guy that can dominate the ball. I think I would prefer to say Lauri Markkanen. I would hope to say Lauri Markkanen, just because, you know, he's that high draft pick. His offensive ability at the moment really does break down a defense, and I just wonder what his game would be if he could become even more of an isolation threat. He's not necessarily that at the moment. He's getting a lot of his points on, I guess, not necessarily just catch and shoot, but his offense isn't necessarily, you know, giving him the ball in the post and letting him go to work. That's not his game at the moment. And I don't feel confident when you get Markkanen the ball one-on-one that he's going to create something necessarily, even though he has shown the ability to, I guess, put the ball on the floor and go in there and slam it down on occasions. I think he's still more of a jump shooter at this point. So if you have to ask me that question now, I'd probably say LaVine, but I would want it to be Lauri. But I think LaVine has that combination of being on the wing, being a guy that can handle the ball and has shown that he can score in a range of ways and has been efficient in doing so. So at the moment, I would say LaVine, but I would hope it's Markkanen. That's how I feel about it, at least.
Yeah, it's a big question that needs to be answered, though, because I think Dunn has shown an assertiveness in those times throughout this season.
Yeah,
and he has no fear about it, and I don't feel that Markkanen does either, but Markkanen's opportunities and clutch shots this season have kind of come through the offense, kind of like the pick and roll type of plays, where Dunn has been far more assertive in the last quarter. And that's the only thing that I can think of potentially be an issue down the road for these guys is, you know, who is going to be the man. You really kind of need to think about all the great, even the Heat teams, right? There was kind of a clear delineation. All right, this guy's the A, this guy's the B, this guy's the C. I don't think that's really happened here. And my opinion is for the success, overall success of these three winning a title, that eventually has to be Markkanen. I think he's got the highest ceiling. I think, and he's 20 years old. He's got to be the guy on a pick and roll if it's a small guy, he takes him in the post, and the team does whatever it takes to get him the ball there. If it's a big guy that comes on him, he takes him off the dribble and just destroys him. And I just hope that happens. But it's a tricky thing, a team dynamic. If there's an egos getting away, we'll see what happens down the road. But that's something to keep an eye on over the next few years.
Yeah, and one of Lowry or Levine or maybe even Dunn, one of those guys really needs to develop as someone that can get to the line like Jimmy Butler used to do, because that's what you need in the crunch time as well. You can't just rely on system offense. And look, I'm looking at the free throw totals right now for this team, and the leader for free throws on the Bulls at the moment is Justin Holiday, and then after him is Jerry and Grant and David Nwaba. So they're three role players.
Oh my God.
They're not necessarily guys you would think as high foul drawers or guys that are going to beat guys off the dribble, but they are shooting more free throws, or they have shot more free throws this season than Lowry, Markkanen, and Chris Dunn. Obviously, Zach LaVine is towards the bottom because he's just returned, but traditionally he hasn't been someone that gets to the line a lot. So if we want to talk about number one options on this Bulls team for any of these guys to be justifiably a number one option, one of them needs to really develop their ability to draw contact and get to the line probably 6 to 7 times a game at least for them to really be a credible number one option. So we're obviously far away from that, and that's why I'm Team Tank, Fred. I think they need that other scorer, because at the moment you're sort of slotting in Chris Dunn as a third option if Mirotić isn't on the floor, assuming LaVine and Markkanen are. So I think that's too much of an offensive responsibility for Dunn at the moment, given that he isn't the most efficient guy going around. But that's why I think this team needs that other top-level scorer heading into this draft, or I'm assuming they can't find that in free agency, of course. So that's why I'm heading towards the draft. But getting back to the big red bus, Fred, where are you dropping Mirotić off? Where's his next stop?
Well, you keep on hearing Utah, and I could see a fit there. You know, I think the thing about Nico is there's a ton of places where he could go. I still point to the Lakers. I don't understand why the Lakers wouldn't have an interest in Nico Mirotić. They're terrible at shooting the three. They have no reason to tank. There's no incentive for the team to tank. And his contract is perfect for them if you can convince him to take it, to agree to the trade. So, you know, the way his contract is, they could make that trade, and then you have a potentially an expiring piece. You know, not huge money, but you need that money off there if you're going to attract anyone out to Los Angeles, especially the likes of LeBron James. Or he can just keep. It's not like he's overpaid. He's making $12 million in next year. You can pick up the team option, and you got Nico Mirotić in LA at 27 years old, extending a defense to open up lanes for some of those, you know, young, nice pieces with the Lakers. I don't understand why the Lakers wouldn't look into him, but there's always going to be a major market for a guy who's a four that can hit the three at a 45% rate. That's the question. And I think that's why he hasn't been traded yet, is there's still a lot of doubters like me. Yeah, well, he's shown it, you know, since he's come back in, you know, 21 or so games, but we've seen glimpses of this before, and we've seen the pits before, which was last year. You know, is he able to do it? And I think there's also a question, too, you know, if he goes to a good team, he's not going to be the A guy. He's not going to be the B guy, and he's kind of failed in that role before. He's ideally suited to me, Nico, as a C, and he hasn't really performed great in that role with the notable exception of his rookie year in March. That 30-day period, he played really well, but you know, I hope he goes to Utah. If we can somehow, I just don't see any way that they would give us that pick. But I'm not a believer in trading Nico for a second rounder. And I just think that's stupid. Second round picks, I've seen, I just recently saw a study from 19, I think it was the 1988 or 89 to 2008. And it was like minuscule that you can expect to find anyone really, even a rotation player in the second round. I got in this argument on Waddle and Sylvie. You know, they started throwing out every great second-round pick over the last 5 years. Go through it. Look at the 2016 second-round picks. Yeah, half these – I think it was 90% of the guys aren't even in the NBA. It's really hard to find value with second-round picks. I consider them to be basically worthless. Do you feel the same?
No. I do not. I think there is definitely value in second-round picks. And if I look at the 2017 draft – you know, obviously I can start with Jordan Bell, but I won't bang on about that. But like,
Bill Russell. Bill Russell. Let's take a step back on Jordan Bell.
Yeah, Jordan Bell for the moment, because I mean, I'll just put him aside.
Let's tackle Jordan. Okay, all right, go on.
All right, let me go on, because you're going to divert this thing. We've got a game to watch soon, so I don't want to let you bang on for 10 minutes about why Jordan Bell isn't prime Bill Russell. So, but like, I'm talking about guys like Juwan Evans, Semi Ojeleye, Dwayne Bacon, who else is here?
Oh.
Frank Mason, Frank Jackson. These are some names. Jonah Bolden, that the Sixers have picked, is currently overseas, but he's an Australian. He can definitely play. Dylan Brooks, Sterling Brown. There's at least 6 to 7 guys in this second round in the 2017 draft that are interesting players that you would want to take a hit on. So I definitely don't agree with you that second round picks have no value, but I do agree with you that the Bulls shouldn't be trading someone like Mirotić just for a second round pick, just for the sake of it. I do agree with you on that.
Oh, good. Yeah, good. So, I mean, if it's a late first rounder, I would take that.
Yeah.
You know, I think you occasionally find value there, but it's kind of a frustrating situation to me, because even if it is a late first rounder, are we realistically going to find anyone playing at the same level as Nico Mirotić or better than Nico Mirotić? Probably not. You know what I mean?
No, probably not, but you might get someone that's a capable role player, and by removing Mirotić, then you're hopefully improving your own pick. So does that improvement of jumping maybe 5 places in the draft whilst also getting another first-round pick later in the draft, does those two players combined being on cost-controlled assets, does that bring you more value over the next 3 to 4 years than Mirotić does? Because at the same time, I know we're focusing on Mirotić right now, but at some point, if he keeps playing like this, you're going to need to re-sign him, and if he keeps playing like this, he's going to be expensive in a few seasons' time. So, yeah, look, I'm still on team trade Mirotić, and I'm definitely on team tank. And, interesting to hear where you are. But, look, we'll reconvene in maybe a month's time to see how the big red bus is traveling. Hopefully there's been no nails, like, sort of spiked itself in the tire or anything like that. And hopefully it's driving along smoothly, Fred. I'm not too sure with you driving the bus. And hopefully you're not drinking too many beers whilst driving.
Well, let me just tell you, you're always invited on the big red bus. I'd love to see you on top of the bus, like Teen Wolf. You ever see Teen Wolf, the scene in Teen Wolf where he's on top of the bus? We'd love to have you on to do a little surfing. I promise I'll try to keep as straight as possible so to not throw you off. But if you did accidentally fall off, I promise I'd stop to see, make sure that you're okay.
Thank you. And you're definitely showing your age with the Teen Wolf reference. So I'm not sure the kids would understand that, but yeah, okay. I definitely get what you're saying.
If you haven't seen Teen Wolf, drop everything you're doing and go to a local Blockbuster video and pull out get one of those VHS tapes and watch Teen Wolf. You gotta go see it.
Also showing your age with that Blockbuster reference. All right. Well, Fred, thanks for jumping on, and we'll talk again soon, my friend.
Take it easy, brother. Always good talking to you. I love Australia, and I hope to be down there soon. And if we do, we got to go out for a Vegemite sandwich and what's the big beer down there now? Foster's?
Well, not really. It doesn't really exist anymore. But yeah, we can go for a beer. And if you want, you can stay at my house. I won't charge you too much. But
showing my age again. Do you got 6 cats? If you got 6 cats, I'm not
going to. No cats. No cats.
All right, brother.
All right, take it easy,
Mark. See ya. Have a good one. Go Bulls.
So that was Fred Fire for everybody. Thanks again for Fred for joining me on this week's episode of the podcast. Apologies about my audio there. Not too sure what happened to my mic, but there was a bit of, I guess, background crackle, which I couldn't really edit out, unfortunately. So if you made it through the podcast this far, thank you for persevering. Not too sure what happened, but hopefully it won't be a problem going forward. But I'll try to monitor that. But again, thanks for persevering for that. But in the interim, be sure to follow Fred on Twitter, at CBE Fred on Twitter, and you can obviously catch his podcast at ChicagoBullseye.com, as well as in your iTunes feed. You can get the Big Red Bus as well as the Chicago Bullseye. And whilst you're at iTunes, you can also subscribe to the Bulls HQ podcast if you haven't done so already. So be sure to subscribe, and of course, leave a review if you do have a chance. That's very greatly appreciated. But I closed last week's show pretty much saying, look, we'll see what happens with Mirotić, and we'll see, I guess, what happens with him in terms of if he's going to be traded and the impact that will have on the tank. And I guess I'm going to be repeating
treating myself this week. So hopefully we see a trade go down this week. If you are like me and you want to see the Bulls shore up that tank, and we'll see what happens. I'm assuming they'll probably be holding out closer to the trade deadline, but you never know, I guess. But hopefully there's some action this week on the trade front there. And if the Bulls are tanking, they really need to start getting a move along with who they deal and when they start to deal these players. And as I mentioned, the schedule is somewhat favorable over the next 2 weeks. So now would be the right time to start to shore up the tank. So we will see what happens if Mirotić is, for whatever reason traded before the next podcast is meant to be scheduled. So I usually release these things on a Monday morning. I might do an emergency style type podcast just to get my thoughts out about the trade. But if he's not, then I will see you all Monday morning. And thank you for joining me this week.